You are listening to a sermon by Connie Seidler, recorded on Sunday, November 8, 2009, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
First of all, the way I wanted to start has actually changed because I noticed that we read today two texts, and the first one was Ruth 1:3-5. And my copy of the lectionary actually had the 3 and the 1 switched around. So it said Ruth 3:1-5. Which, and I've been looking at the text in the book of Ruth, like, through this lens. I kind of was a bit, stunned because it just suddenly stopped at verse 5, but I didn't question the lectionary. So I wanna read those verses, so just that we get the context. I will actually refer to those verses from chapter 1 as well, so it all will fit neatly in. So I'm just going to read those 5 verses. One day, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you, where you will be well provided for? Is it not Boaz, with whose servant girls you have been, a kinsman of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So if we look at the text through like these lenses of these 5 verses from chapter 3 and the 4 verses from chapter 4, it kind of reminded me of if you watch the show Without a Trace and you only see the ending. Now, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the show Without a Trace. In this show, usually in the beginning, a person disappears, and then several FBI agents work hard to find this person. And in the end, they usually always find the person. So now, if you just watch the ending, how they find the person, we would miss out on the journey they have to take to actually get there. And this journey has often, it often raises interesting questions. They built in, like, questions about death penalty, or other, like, or racism, terrorism, and these things. And often the story has a twist. So if we just watched the ending, we would miss out on the part that came before, that actually explains a lot, and how they get there, and why it is a reward to find this person. So as I was looking at those verses from the book of Ruth, I thought the same thing. If we just look at those passages that tell us about Naomi's plan to find a husband for Ruth and the joyful ending of the story, there's a wedding and there's the birth of a child. It seems like that takes place all the time, you know, people get married, people have children. What is so special about the book and what are they really celebrating? And I thought, if we don't take into account the first half of the book, we will miss out on what they are really celebrating, and we will miss out on a lot that the story tells us about the God we are following and about the characters of these people. And so I've been thinking and praying about how we can look at the book of Ruth and these verses and incorporate those things and discover those things. And while I was praying about it, the Lord gave me a good comparison that I read in a book that said, that was talking about sequoia or redwood trees, like these big trees in parks in the West. And when they get cut, naturalists, they can show you a cross-section of one of those trees, and then they can point out that the rings of the tree actually reveal its history year by year. So they say, oh, here's a ring that represents a year when there was a terrible drought. And there's a couple of rings from years when there was a lot of rain. Here are some normal years of growth, and there the tree was struck by lightning. So all of this lies embedded in the heart of the tree, and it kind of represents the autobiography of its life. And the Book of Ruth, I felt, is quite similar. To really know what is celebrated at the end, we have to look at all those rings throughout the story. And so this is how I've structured the sermon for today. I want to look at it in rings. And the first ring I want to talk about starts with the beginning, and I have entitled it Loss and Lament. The story starts out in a lot of loss, which is actually quite tremendous when you consider that psychologists tell us, and if we believe them, then actually the loss of a child or the loss of a spouse are the two most stressful events that can happen in life. Now, Naomi lost her husband, and not only one son, but actually two, within several years. So she had a lot of loss, and on the one hand, Naomi had to lament this loss and feel the pain before joy could set in. On the other hand, God was working for her good, even in those difficult circumstances. But when Naomi returned from Moab, she bitterly lamented, and this is the literal translation of the Hebrew. She says, "Full was I when I went away, but empty has Yahweh brought me back." Now, in Hebrew, the first word in the sentence has always the emphasis. So she puts full and empty at the beginning of her sentences, which emphasizes the contrast. So that was her view, but is it actually really true? Was she completely empty-handed? I think she wasn't, not completely. There was a lot of loss, but she had the stubbornly loyal Moabite woman by her side that would not leave her. And she also arrived at the beginning of the barley harvest. And this situation set the whole action, the whole journey in motion, because Ruth could glean in Boaz's field. So what she didn't see at this point was that God's hand wasn't against her, but he was working for her good. He was at work even in her pain, and his ultimate aim was to bless her, even though she might have perceived it differently back then. And I believe that God's aim in our life is to bless us, even in difficult circumstances. And if we just like open our eyes, I believe that we might see a loyal friend to our barley harvest. And actually, when I was preparing this, when I was pondering this, and something happened. I had a really bad week, and on the weekend I was feeling kind of down and sad. And then on Sunday morning, one of my housemates, Maria, she came and said, "Connie, I want to go to church with you today." And I thought, "Oh, this is great." And so Maria came to church with me, and then we ended up having lunch together and spent the whole afternoon together. And I really felt God saying to me, "This is how I cling to you too." So I thought that was a neat testimony to what I've been preparing. Now my second ring I've titled Loyalty. We move on in the story a little bit. Ruth, she, as we have seen, she's stubbornly loyal to Naomi and to Naomi's God. So listen to this, that expresses her total commitment to follow the life and faith of Naomi. "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me." So Ruth was willing to leave behind everything that she knew and to follow Naomi and Naomi's God. Now, given the circumstances, Ruth had lost her husband, and after years of marriage, she was still childless, and she had also lost two other members of her family, her brother-in-law and her father-in-law. She could have reacted quite differently. She could have said, "If this is how your God deals with me and treats me, I'd rather not have it." But she decided to stay loyal to God in spite of the suffering and the pain that she might not have understood. And I think in our lives, we will come across the same question about suffering and pain, either in our lives or in someone else's that we know. And I believe it brings us to a question and a choice we have to make. The question is God really good? Can he be trusted? And we have to make a choice whether we want to keep on following him or whether we turn away. And in order to shed a little light on this topic, we've heard already the voice of Ruth and how she reacted. And I thought, rather than like talking about it, I want to invite two more voices to the conversation and just let them speak. And one of them is Eugene Peterson, who used to be a professor at Regent. That's the second one. But first, there is the story that I read last summer, and it's about this family, and it's a family of four. The daughter is Holly, and the son is Hunter, and Hunter was shot. He worked at a gas station. He was shot and died. And the book is about how the family, who's Christian, struggles through dealing with his death and the questions they have about God. And they all kind of get away from God for a while. And then the mom eventually says a couple of things that I want to read, that is how she finds her way back to God. So she says, "All these months, I have been trying to find a way out of all this pain and blaming God for taking away my son. I can't bring Hunter back, but hating God won't do it. Isolating myself from my family won't do it. He's gone from this life forever." She took a deep breath. Holly's eyes filled with tears of empathy. What her mother had said was true. Hunter would never return to them. But, her mother added firmly, "although I won't see him here on this side of time, I still believe that I will see him on the other side in heaven." Hating God won't do it. Let's now listen to what Eugene Peterson says. And this is a book about Psalms for the year. And there's Psalm 128 and 129. Psalm 128 is filled with a lot of blessings that the psalmist expresses. Psalm 129, quite the contrary, it talks about a lot of suffering and afflictions that the psalmist has to go through. So Eugene Peterson writes about those two psalms and says, "If God's people participate in exceptional blessings in Psalm 129, they also suffer extraordinary afflictions, as can be seen in Psalm 29. Neither cancels out the other. They exist side by side in the life of faith. Both joys and sufferings are redeemed by the Lord, who lived and died for us in Jesus Christ." And he prays, "I look to you for comfort, strength, and a final day when you will set all things right through Jesus Christ." So wrestling through these questions might not be easy, but in the end, when we're reconciled with God, our faith will be deeper and more authentic. And I believe that this leads us to our third ring, which I have entitled Integrity. Because chapter 3 of the book of Ruth displays 3 individuals acting on behalf of others, even when there's no obligation to do so. Naomi, as we have just read, tries to find Ruth a husband, but she has no legal obligation or duty to do so. She could have just been glad that Boaz lets Ruth clean enough for them to live. And if her plan had failed, then actually it might have ruined their relationship with Boaz, and they would have been worse off with no more food. Ruth also is not obligated to follow Naomi's plan, because she runs a number of risks actually in doing so. Boaz could have mocked her for her request, or he could have charged her with adultery, because technically she was still married, she was still the wife of Mahlon, because she didn't have a new marriage contract. Or Boaz could also have used her for his own personal gain and gratification, and made use of the situation in a different way. Yet Ruth, she says, "I will do whatever you say," and demonstrates again her commitment to and trust in Naomi. Finally, Boaz, as we have seen, he could have responded in different ways, and he had no obligation to respond with the kindness and the integrity towards Ruth and Naomi that's reported in those verses in chapter 3 and later. So all of them, all three, they model decisive action in doing what is right, and each one acts honorably and with integrity, and their motives are pure. They show that a life of integrity and pure motives will bring honor and glory to God's name. And I think we can ask us the same question: do we want to live such a life of integrity and pure motives so that we can also bring honor and glory to God's name? And finally, we move to the fourth ring and last ring, and I've entitled it God's Loving Kindness. And this will lead us towards the end of the book, and this is the reason why they celebrate more than just a wedding, a marriage, and the birth of a child. They celebrate God's loving kindness and his sovereignty and providence. In some ways, God hardly seems present at all in the story of Ruth, and he intervenes directly only two times, when he gives food to the Israelites in Bethlehem in chapter 1, and when he gives Ruth conception in chapter 4. But close inspection reveals that God is very much present. He might seem hidden behind the scenes, but his sovereign hand is quietly guiding the events of the book, as we can see, for example, in the barley harvest. Boaz may be able to provide for the two women. He may be able to redeem the land and marry Ruth, but he is not able by himself to restore Naomi's emptiness as a result of childlessness. It is only the grace of God, and only God is able to do so and provide for them and redeem them by the means of the birth of Obed, the little son. So this leads us to verses 13 and 17 in chapter 4, as we have read. And in those verses, we see the resolution to the death and the emptiness that have afflicted Naomi. And they are truly resolved in those verses. We have read the speech of the women who comment on the situation and the meaning of the events. And they devote, like, everything is... Well, that's just... I just want to actually read those verses again. So then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without next of kin, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has borne him." So this boy is Yahweh's provision to Naomi as a kinsman redeemer, and he will renew her life and sustain her in her old age, which is especially important, or was especially important in this time back then, because in those times a woman it was extremely difficult and hard for her to support herself without a family or husband. So this little boy And through his birth, he provides restoration and wholeness to the whole family. And death has given way to life and emptiness to fullness. Now, in conclusion, we see that Ruth and Naomi, both Ruth and Naomi, see restored to them what has been lost. And more, for Ruth actually experiences an instant pregnancy that Yahweh provides, which stands in stark contrast to the beginning of the story when Ruth is childless for years. And her decision also, Ruth's decision to commit her life to Naomi and Yahweh, bears results that she cannot have possibly imagined for herself, for Naomi, and for the further course of history, as Andrew has already said and reminded us of. She could not have possibly imagined what God will do to her descendants. After all, Obed, her son, became the grandfather of David, and later on, Jesus was born out of this family. So, in summary, there's common people who act unselfishly toward each other along the lines of God's loving kindness, and then we see uncommon results. And as we go into this week, let us ask ourselves too where we can show unselfishly God's love to others, and let God receive uncommon results. Amen.